Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Chris, how's it going?
It's going well. Excited that it's finally game week, and pretty soon we can actually start playing football rather than just talking about it.
Oh, yeah, just previewing it. We can actually talk about the games. Well, the uniform combination has been revealed. You think it's pretty snazzy? What are the fans saying about it?
I think I ran a poll on my site yesterday, first about the helmet. 73% of the people, responders, like 2,600 responders, liked the helmet. Today, I ran a poll asking whether or not they liked the entire combination. And when I left the office, I think it was like 83% positive.
Okay.
I like it. I think it would look better with no stripes on the shoulders. I'm okay with it. I don't know. I've never been a fan of stripes on shoulders for Virginia Tech. My favorite all-time uniform at Virginia Tech was our 98 through 2003 uniform. Just a solid, clean, maroon look. For the big games, you replace the white pants with maroon pants. I mean, very, very simple. Those were my favorites.
No, but that's also a great team. So you have great team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Personally, I'd love to see the black come back, but you can't. It's going to be hard.
I keep hearing rumor about some kind of black uniforms for NC State.
Really?
Oh, there we go.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Friday night game, right?
Yep.
Okay. I get the sense we've been at the media sessions this week and last week, and it seems to me that the players and coaches are just absolutely fed up with talking about the game, and they're just ready for it to start. Like, I think it was Augie Conte yesterday that it was like he had pre-recorded everything that he was going to say in his head.
Oh,
it was just like,
we're
ready.
It was so obvious.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
like he was reading from a card
oh,
almost.
Yeah. But it just seems like they're just done talking about it and ready to get it underway.
I think, you know, as a football player, you get to this point in camp, or it's not really camp anymore, but you're ready to hit somebody in a jersey with a different color.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Deion Clark, you're tired of tackling J.C. Coleman, you want to tackle.
Or tired of not being able to tackle Michael Brewer.
Exactly,
or
yeah, yeah. Because when you get into the backfield, you want to be able to tee off on a quarterback rather than holding up. So I think it's that frustrating time during the preseason for everybody where they just it's time to go. I mean, you're not going to get any better at this point as far as going through the preseason. All you can do is go play football games right now. So,
right.
So yeah, I mean, I think they're tired of talking about it, but I also think they're tired of just practicing every single day, that they want to go see what all that practice has gotten them. They want to test themselves against other competitors. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same for every program at this time of year.
Right. I didn't want to talk about this too much, but we didn't get a chance to ask you about the whole fine system and fine gate and everything. Mm. But do you think Frank Beamer maybe should have came out and defended his coach a little bit more after that?
I kind of wish he had, because I wrote an article the night that happened, and everybody was teeing off on Bud Foster as if he had called a press conference and announced to the media that he thought that was, you know,
that's not what happened.
We were all in there. There's a monitor right in front of the players' lounge that listed the fines and everything like that. So all the reporters saw it, and Bud Foster happened to be the first coach up to get interviewed. And so he was asked about it in the very first question. I mean, if it had been Frank Beamer, if it had been Scott Loeffler, Shane Beamer, you know, they all would have been asked the same question if they happened to be the first guys up to get interviewed. So he got caught in a bad situation. It's not his fault. This was a Virginia Tech football program issue and not a Bud Foster issue. So I hated to see him get drugged through the mud by the national media and on Twitter and things like that by people who weren't there and couldn't put it in perspective.
Yeah, I know on Monday, though, he handled it like a pro. I mean, there was a question about whether he would be more cautious around the media. But no, he came out with a joke saying, hey, you guys tried to pin this on me, and then answered questions for 25 minutes. So he's got pretty thick skin.
I mean, he's been coaching for a long time. As a defensive coordinator, you're going to face a lot of criticism. I mean, even a guy like Bud Foster is great as he is, you know, there's always one game every year where fans might not think the defense played as well as they should have, and he's going to take heat for it. So, you know, he's used to it from that standpoint, and that's just the way he is from a personality standpoint. He's very open when it comes to talking to the media and things like that. Maybe he shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's That's one of the reasons that he might not be a head coach at this point. Because I think if Scott Loeffler was up there, he would have answered the question by saying, that's a great question for Coach Beamer, which is what he always does when he gets a question that he knows he shouldn't answer. So that would have been interesting if that had been an offensive day instead of a defensive day, and Loeffler had been up there instead of Foster. He gets asked that question, then maybe nobody ever finds out about this. Maybe Whit Babcock never finds out about this. So it might be better that it went ahead and came out if Whit didn't want it going on.
And with this situation and the bad press and everything like that, and Whit finding out about it, do you think that, again, not saying this will happen, but say Virginia Tech has another 7-win season, could this be the type of thing that pushes Whit over the edge and saying and making a decision and making a change at the top?
You know, that's a really good question. I think it's one of those things that adds up. You know, I don't think it'll ever be like the defining factor or anything like that. It's ultimately going to come down to wins and losses and fan support and how much money you're making. But you know, it is one of those. It's a little thing, and then the little things like that used to not happen in this program. This program never had anything go wrong for probably 10 years. I mean, talk about a program that just took care of the little things in every facet. And now that there's a couple of incidents in the last 6 months with this, and then the Take Back the Night thing back in April, it's just they aren't taking care of the little details like they used to, in my opinion. So that's a potential issue. The biggest issue, though, is it just shows a disconnect between the football program and the athletic department. Nobody thought that this would be a good idea to run this by the athletic director, because they'd been doing stuff like this for a long time. But the biggest thing is I think it shows a lack of how should I phrase this? Worldly awareness, because that's not something you can get away with these days. I mean, people are going to look at that a lot differently today than they would have 10 years ago.
I think they would have looked at this quite differently, you know, if this was just a local story and stayed local.
Yeah.
But in a national context, it has completely different optics if you're sitting up in New York or somewhere in L.A. as compared to sitting here in Blacksburg, where, you know, this is small potatoes, really.
Oh, I mean, sure,
it's not
sure.
Really a big deal.
Yeah, it's not. And the accusations that Tech is just trying to rip off football players, it's a bunch of rich coaches trying to rip off football players. No, that's just stupid. It's a discipline thing. They're trying to install discipline in their program. I think they should have picked a different way.
Right.
But they're not out to get anybody. I mean, that's just a silly, silly accusation.
Yeah, to me, that was just clickbait stuff.
Absolutely.
Deadspin. And, I mean, I'll say it right here. Mike and Mike, they didn't have the full facts. They were just hammering Bud Foster. They didn't have the full context, and you've got national media guys just looking at tweets and trying to pin some kind of column or article and without having the full story.
If you ever see me write an article based around a tweet, I want you to smack me in the face. I will include tweets in my article to maybe get some points across to a certain extent, but I will never run an article and form an opinion based on a couple of tweets that I see. I mean, that's poor journalism.
Yesterday, Shane Beamer spoke to the media and gave an update on Shai McKenzie and Marshawn Williams. Looks like Shai McKenzie will not be redshirted. Marshawn Williams, I think he said it's 50-50, but I got the impression that more likely than not, he will be redshirted. But with those guys, and just, I wanted to, I don't think we ever asked you this, but with all the running backs that, you know, played last year and could play this year, like Trey Edmonds, Shai McKenzie, J.C. Coleman, Marshawn Williams, and Trayvon McMillan, how would you rate those guys in terms of overall talent level?
Like, that's a really good question. You know, I want to go back to our 2005 team.
Yeah.
When you've got a couple of upperclassmen in Mike Emo and Cedric Humes, and you've got a talented redshirt freshman in Brandon Orr, who's your third running back. And that kind of reminds me of this year with Trayvon McMillan being the Brandon Orr and J.C. Coleman and Trey Edmonds being your Cedric Humes and your Mike Emo. I mean, even the sizes of the players are somewhat similar. So I don't think there's a Ryan Williams or a David Wilson or a Lee Suggs in this group, but I think it's a solid, capable group. And you know, if the rotation is managed correctly and the offensive line plays decent, I think they're going to be productive.
One thing I saw, and you mentioned this on TechSideline.com with the slot receiver, of course, there's the questions about who's going to be the wide receiver and everything like that. And a guy that is in line for a redshirt this year, running back Coleman Fox. A little bit surprised that they haven't tried him out at least at slot receiver just to see what he could do and bring to the table.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised because I always projected him as a slot receiver. He played running back and receiver in high school, but you know I don't think he's as good a running back as DeShaun McLeese. So I think if they leave him at running back, I'm not so sure they're not wasting a year. But at any rate, I kind of think he'll be a slot receiver in the spring.
Right.
But, again, it's too early to tell. You never know how guys are going to develop in the weight room. It's tough for guys that don't play wide receiver in high school to make that transition in a pro-style offense at the college level because the passing trees are tough to pick up and everything like that for guys with no background doing stuff like that. Now, that said, you know, he did play some wide receiver in high school. It's not like he's never played the position before. So I think it's worth a look.
And sticking with the red shirts, of course, we've heard about Tim Settle and some of the other defensive tackles. And that opens up a spot in the rotation, at least, for Steve Sobchak, who he's like 310 pounds. I mean, I see him walking through the halls, and he's just...
get out of the way,
yeah,
man.
He's with the tattoos and just an imposing figure. And I think he had a big hit on... It might have been Coleman Fox that he had a big hit on in the first scrimmage or something like that. But you think he could make some kind of impact this season in that rotation?
Yeah, I think so. He's pushing Nigel Williams right now, and that's pretty impressive considering the numbers Nigel Williams has put up in past seasons. I think Sobchak, I've been impressed with him every time I've seen him since the spring. I mean, he's stood out. He's not a guy that sits there and catches blocks. He's strong. He's a short, squatty defensive tackle. He's got a good first step and can get into the backfield, and that makes him a perfect fit for Virginia Tech's system. So, you know, I'm not saying he's going to play a ton against Ohio State because I don't think he is. I think they'll play four defensive tackles in that game, and they're going to play their most experienced guys. But he will certainly have a role for this team this year.
Chris, it does seem as though, since we have 5 days away, that there's not that much more as far as preparation that these guys can do before the game. What are they going to do? What's their schedule look like for the next 5 days before game time?
I think you're just sharpening them up on what you've already installed. I don't think they're installing anything new for Ohio State at this point. If they do, it won't be anything huge. But I just think you try to perfect what you've already installed. I don't see the point in doing a lot of huge, heavy contract drills. I think they'll do some. They'll have their typical middle drill probably today or tomorrow. But I think the focus is to try to get sharpen up mentally and to get everybody as healthy as possible.
We've got more with Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And actually getting to a little bit of the game preview, is Ezekiel Elliott the biggest concern you have going into this game, that main guy that you guys have focused on?
I think so. I mean, any quarterback Ohio State has put on the field the last few years has been really good. I mean, Urban Meyer is a great teacher. He's a fantastic coach. You know, probably the worst game he's ever coached was, ironically, the Virginia Tech game last year. Absolutely. I mean, he only gave Zeke Elliott the ball 8 times in that game, I think. Now, he didn't know what he had in Elliott at that point. He was a true sophomore playing the second game of his, you know, second season. Didn't realize how good he was until later in the year, in my opinion. That's not going to happen again, no matter what kind of front Virginia Tech presents in this game. He's going to try to get the ball to Zeke Elliott at least 20 times in this game. So that's going to be key. I think whatever quarterback he throws out there is going to be experienced, and they're not going to throw 3 interceptions like they did last year, in my opinion. So, to me, you just can't let him be two-dimensional. You got to make him be one-dimensional. You got to stop the running game. If Zeke Elliott gets loose and has a big night, then Tech does not have a chance to win that game.
Do you think that guys on the outside like Kendall Fuller and Faison and Chuck Clark, you think they'd be able to tackle Elliott in a one-on-one situation?
I think so. I mean, those guys are good tacklers. I think Virginia Tech's been doing a little bit different tackling drill. I think they're doing a roll tackle drill. And this is for Zeke Elliott, but it's also for, you know, a big quarterback like Cardale Jones when you get into their legs. And it's to teach guys to wrap up. But when you tackle a guy, you hit him low. You wrap him up and you kind of twist him. You roll him over and instead of just – you see so many guys coming in with just their shoulders and not wrapping up properly. So from what I've seen on their Snapchat videos, you know, that tackling technique – you know, I think it's good teaching for any team you play, mm-hmm. but especially for a team that's so big and physical like Ohio State, you have to wrap up and you have to be physical. You know, you have to run through guys, but you also have to be physical with your arms. You do have to twist those legs and, mm-hmm. and just take them off their feet.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear, because that's been something that's really been a problem for Tech in some of mm-hmm. these big games. Is, you know, they'll be fine. Then they'll, you know, the other team will break out a 50-60 yard play and they'll have the same kind of issues. They're right there, ready to make the play.
Yeah.
They just can't seem to actually make it. So that's a really good sign if they're able to do that. Do you think that we are going to be able to run the ball enough on offense where we can take out some of the pressure off of Michael Brewer so he's not looking at 3rd and 8s, 3rd and 10s, 3rd and 15s, but looking at 3rd and 2s, 3rd and 3s, and real chances of making it on 3rd down?
You know, that might be the most important question of this entire game. I know everybody wants to talk about Bud versus Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I have confidence in Bud. I also have confidence in Urban Meyer. I think that'll probably break even. Mm. Tech defense versus Ohio State's offense, that'll be an even match. Whether Virginia Tech can run the football, I think with Joey Bosa being out, and all of Ohio State's defensive ends are so inexperienced. I mean, their most experienced defensive end has 200 snaps under his belt, and he got 200 snaps as like a freshman last year as their 5th or 6th defensive end, and mostly in mop-up situations and all their blowouts. So they really don't have anybody up there who's played very much as far as a real live game situation. So, you know, I think Ryan Mallick being an excellent run blocker, you attack the edges of Ohio State. You stay away from the Washington kid in the middle. I think their linebackers are pretty good. But, you know, I think you can have your biggest mismatch against their defensive ends in this game.
Do you think Trey Edmonds or J.C. Coleman would be more successful in a game like this?
Yeah, you know, I think Trey's more likely to bust a big play than J.C. J.C. really showed a lot as far as his vision and stuff towards the end of last season. But, we've seen Trey Edmonds rush for 150 yards against Alabama mm-hmm. before. Ultimately, it's going to come down to how well plays are blocked. JC didn't do anything last year unless the plays were blocked well, right? And most running backs are like that. So if it's blocked well, I'm confident in those guys. Trey has a higher ceiling. If he runs low, I think he's more effective than JC. But only if he runs low.
And with the quarterback question of Ohio State, and of course Urban Meyer keeping it under wraps, but he did name JT Barrett the captain. I think mm-hmm. that's a little bit of a sign that Barrett's going to be the starter. That's the guy who I've thought was going to be the starter from day one, just from everything I've heard and us talking to Ohio State beat writers and things like that. But I feel like I don't know about you, Chris, but I feel like the Virginia Tech defense matches up better against Cardale Jones than JT Barrett, just because Barrett can be so elusive, mm-hmm. and that's one extra runner that you don't have to worry about. Now, Cardale Jones can run a little bit, but he's not quite as elusive as Barrett, and Jones has never faced Virginia Tech before, so he doesn't have that firsthand experience or knowledge.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, when it comes down to it, he's only thrown 92 passes right, in a college game. So he's a very inexperienced quarterback who had the benefit of Ezekiel Elliott averaging 250 yards a game on the ground over the 3 games that he played. Now, I'm not taking anything away from his performance because he played very well. He's a big, strong, tough guy. But I've always liked the maturity of Barrett better. I mean, just the way he's carried himself. I mean, just when we go all the way back to Cardell's tweets about how they shouldn't have to go to class and things like that because they're Ohio State football players. I mean, come on, man. You know, what are you thinking? So I've always thought Barrett was the more mature guy. You want maturity in your quarterback position. So I'm inclined to believe that Barrett will start the game. You know, back in the spring, I was sitting there thinking, it'll probably be Jones. But the more I've thought about it over the summer, I think it will be Barrett. That's who I would prefer. I want a quarterback on the field that I can trust. Mm-hmm. And he's proven more at this point than Jones. And I know Jones had a great 3-game stretch at the end of the season, but the bottom line is, he's only thrown 92 passes.
You see Braxton Miller maybe in on some trick plays and some kind of throwing passes downfield. And
I mean, it would make sense, but that's just so obvious.
Right.
You can't help but prepare for it, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Tech will be ready for that. Now, it's obviously that a player in a game could have a brain fart and give it up, but I mean, they're going to practice for that. They're going to be prepared. I mean, even your worst coaches out there would know, oh, look, there's a former All-American quarterback who's now their H-back. They might hand it to him and have him throw it down the field. Everybody knows that. So I don't think it will take Tech by surprise if they try it. Now, they've still got to execute and stop the play, but it's not going to take anybody by surprise.
See, one thing for me, and I still think Ohio State's going to win, but I think it's going to be much closer than people think. But what really helps Virginia Tech is those, not just the suspension of Joey Bosa, but the suspensions of the other wide receivers and the injury to Noah Brown. Because I look at the roster and I see Michael Thomas as really the lone X factor at the wide receiver position. And you've got him covered up with Kendall Fuller. Other than that, I know, you know, their backups and their second and third string, they're all former four-star receivers, but they don't have that in-game experience. I feel like that's where it really helps out Bud Foster's defense and the corners just being able to cover out the wide receivers and focus more on the run and taking down Ezekiel Elliott and Curtis Samuel and all those types of guys.
Yeah, you're right. And Tech shut down their wide receivers last year anyway. Yeah. I mean, they weren't suspended. They had their best guys out there, and Tech put their corners on an island and played man coverage quite a bit and completely shut them down. And then this year they're playing against backups. In fact, they're playing against backups of last year's backups. Yeah. So I feel pretty good about that. And I know Urban will have a different game plan, and then he'll find ways to get guys open because he's an excellent offensive coach. But I think that that's a battle Virginia Tech will win, our defensive backs against their receivers.
This seems in so many ways like a rehash of last year's game. You've got their, except for it's flipped. You were playing at home instead of on the road. Their best defensive player is out instead of their quarterback is their best offensive player and most important offensive player. But all of, you know, they're not ready yet. It seems like Ohio State, these guys are going to be great, but they're not quite ready. And if they lose, who really cares?
As long as they don't get beat by like 50 or something.
Exactly.
You know,
as
long as they show up and play a decent game, you're right. Yeah. As long as they don't let it bother them and lead to a losing streak, yeah, I agree. It's not a big deal. You got nothing to lose in this game. My attitude's a little bit different this year. Last year, I just wanted to get it over with. I didn't think we had a chance. I just wanted to not have any major injuries and get back healthy. Now, as it turned out, we won, and then we had a bunch of injuries. So I think playing that game last year might have actually cost us a couple of games later in the year. It was great at the time, but I don't think it did any favors to the team later in the year. But this is an older, more physically mature group this year, so I don't expect that to be as much of an issue.
So you think the team was maybe fighting some overconfidence after beating Ohio State, and that may have bled over the next couple of weeks?
I don't know if I'd call it overconfidence. I just think it's when you get on that high – And then you come back and you're playing East Carolina, and you're banged up, and you're a bunch of freshmen, and you've never gone through that before. That's your second college football game, and plus, honestly, Tech just didn't have the talent at certain spots last year. I mean, even their seniors in offense were not very good. I mean, their interior line wasn't particularly good. I think there's more overall talent this year. I think they played above their heads against Ohio State last season, most definitely. But at the same time, if they didn't have those injuries, I think they would have won, you know, 7 or 8 games in the regular season. But it's a different year. Tech will have their shot at it. I'm like you. I think it'll be a pretty close game.
Yeah. We've got more with Chris Coleman coming up next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, since we won't get to speak with you again until after the Ohio State game, you want to throw a score prediction out there? I know these change on a day-by-day basis, but something you just want to throw out there that you're thinking?
I'm going to write my preview on Friday. So this could change between now and then as I study the game more.
Right.
Right now I've got it around 27-20 Ohio State. I think Tech will play well. I think Tech will show they belong. I think Tech will show that they're going to be in for a pretty good season if they can stay healthy. But when, you know, when it comes down to it, Ohio State's the number one team in the country. I think Virginia Tech would be the third unranked team of all time to ever upset a number one team in the opener. So, I mean, things like this don't happen very, very often. The odds are very much against Virginia Tech in this game. But that said, I do think they match up pretty well, and I think they'll play a good game.
If it was to happen, do you think that the national perception would be that – well, Ohio State didn't have Joey Bosa. They didn't have three other top four wide receivers.
The excuses.
Yeah, it would just be excuses that we'd be hearing. Well, and then
we didn't have C.J. Revis or Sean McKenzie, right?
Yeah, but do you think that would get kind of buried?
Yeah. I mean, depending on who wants to talk about the game, absolutely. No doubt. I think Ohio State, they should feel like – they should beat Virginia Tech. They should come in here and beat Virginia Tech. Crowd or not, they should win the game, even with the players they have – even with the players they're missing. They should win the game. There's no excuses for them if they don't win the football game because they have more talent across the board and more depth than Virginia Tech. So, to me, they don't have any excuses, no. I mean, they were signed a top five class every year. They should hardly ever lose a football game, which obviously they hardly ever do lose a football game. So, yeah, if they lose, it's their own fault because they're not going to run into anybody this season with as much talent as them until they get to the playoffs.
And they're the unanimous AP poll number one pick as well. So if we look at the next couple games, you've got a win against Furman, Purdue, and East Carolina. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
So you'd have 3-1 at that point. Then the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
Where are you going on that one?
Oh, man, I like Tech in that game. If it was at Heinz Field, I wouldn't. But, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to score much on Tech. And Tech's offense is going to be better than it was last year. So, you know, Virginia Tech handled Pitt pretty easily the last time they played him in Lane Stadium.
Right.
So, I've got Tech in that game.
And then North Carolina State, Miami, and Duke.
That NC State game's going to be interesting. Virginia Tech likes to play so much man coverage and blitz so much that, you know, Brissett could potentially find some running lanes. That's how mobile quarterbacks have given Virginia Tech some trouble recently. Miami, it's just hard to say. They lost a bunch of guys. They lost one of their top running backs to a torn ACL the other day.
Gus Edwards.
And it doesn't matter. That series, it doesn't seem to matter who has home field advantage. I do like Virginia Tech over Duke.
Okay.
You know, to me, it's going to come down to that Georgia Tech game. I like Virginia Tech to beat UNC. I like Virginia Tech to beat Virginia. But I think whether Virginia Tech wins a Coastal or not will be decided in that Georgia Tech game.
So you're saying 10-2? I mean,
I think 10-2 is possible. Okay. You know, I think they'll end up dropping a couple and go 9-3 or something like that. If I had to set the over under, I'd set it at 8.5 and I'd bet the over.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
If they can
too.
Stay healthy.
Well, that's a big if with a long college football season. Well, Chris, we appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Have a good one.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Enjoy the game.